career sucks.
Sex just isn't the same.
What's my purpose?
Where did this fat come from?
My relationship is killing me.
I'll never be happy.
My debt is piling up. I'll never find love. Why can't I be like other gay guys? Hey guys, it's time to get a grip, stop whining, make a bold move, and do something amazing with your 40 plus gay life. Let's get to the show with your Tell It Like It Is host, Rick Clemons, who does his best to never act like a dick or a diva unless you act like one first.
Hey, 40 plus gay man, gay talk listeners. We are back once again, and I'm so excited to talk about everything under the sun about aging and being gay and coming out, being in Hollywood and having success, and then even ever after, what's going to happen to us ever after when things happen, whether it's moving beyond a loss or maybe a loss of a boyfriend or career stuff. But all these things, there's an after forever that happens in all of our lives. And I'm really blessed that this individual who I'm about to introduce actually like started bugging the shit out of me. Like, I want to be on your podcast. I want to be on your podcast. I want to be on your podcast. It's not true. He's shaking his head right now, pointing his finger at me. I wish you could see the video. It's like, oh, there's perfect. But he is, well, let's just say he's been in the Hollywood world for a long time. Doesn't make him super old, but he's been around. He's done amazing things, everything from being on Days of Our Lives to Friends to you name it. He has been doing stuff, but one of his most crowning achievements for him right now is the third season of After Forever. And I'm going to just say he'd been nominated for something silly, stupid, something that he's making a big deal about, which we probably should make a big deal about, but I'll let him make the big deal about it. I'm so excited to have Kevin Spiritus here. He popped in on one of our chats. If you guys were in on that chat, that was a really cool time that he popped in and kind of joined us when we were talking about loss and moving on. So let's go right there, Kevin, buddy. Welcome. And he's experienced some loss in moving on because he's right in the middle of a move. That's always a pain in the ass, but you know,
fucking hey, pain in the ass. Bleep that out, okay?
No, we don't bleep anything. We go live and raw and real here. But and it's even worse because you're just moving a few blocks away, and those to me are like the worst moves because it's like, yep. Really, can we just like walk it down the street, put it in? You still have to box
crap
up. If
anybody out there wants to help. If anyone wants to help,
Exactly. Exactly.
So nice to meet you, Rick, officially
yes.
here.
Exactly. We've been working on this for a couple of months, you know. It's just been you had some, you know, stuff come up, and then I did, and then we got some wires crossed. And even when he popped in on our group call, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll see you later this week. And he's messaging me after, like, I don't think so. I'm like, oh no, I was looking at the wrong calendar. I literally had the calendar open for the next week looking at stuff. I'm like, oh, cool. And then I'm like, oh wait, my 60-year-old brain wasn't quite functioning there. So, but quite a career, man.
Oh,
quite
thank
a
you.
Career. And mm-hmm. and I'm sure being gay has been an interesting journey amongst all that, right?
Am I gay? No, I never said that. Oh, question.
Wait,
that's
are we question. Not supposed to? Yeah. No, oh, we're not supposed to talk about this on here?
I brought that up for a reason. When I was growing up, gay for leading men and leading young men was a mm-hmm. scary and unacceptable place to hang out in. Yeah. And I did I think about all the time and energy that I excelled at keeping that facade and trying to appear straight,
right.
be normal, walk the straight line, all that stuff, you know, be worked out strong, look like what a man looks like. And my very first gay thematic movie that I took part in was called Green Plaid Shirt. And I had a career coach read it. I said, Barbara Deutsch, please read this script. Here's why. I said, it's gay thematic. I mean, you know, what's wrong with that? Well, you know, it's going to be on film. It'd be forever. It's not like a right. play. And, you know, what about my career? She said, what career? Do the goddamn movie. and I was just, okay. And I found that the screening at Outfest that year was not just, it wasn't a full coming out. It was just acknowledging that I didn't fall down and die mm-hmm. from letting people see that I was in a gay thematic story. I think for me growing up in the 80s, you know, people associated gay with AIDS. And people very close to me were very, very critical of, you can't be this way, Kevin. You cannot be this way. You have to change it. And I shut them out of my life for about 2 years. So
been there, done that. I actually went through that same thing in the '80s. I mean, you and I hadn't really talked about this prior to this, but I came out in 1980 in, 82, 83. It was in 82.
I think.
And my parents said, no, not going to happen that. And then I went back in for many
reasons. You went back in.
I did. I went back in until 36 and came out again. But it was scary. It was, though. I mean, there was nothing, none of the stuff that you've done even today, you know, none of the representation in, you know, there was no Ellen. There was none of this happening at that point in time. And even your character in Days of Our Lives was like, oh, wow, we're going to go. We're really going to go there. Right.
Well, and that's exactly what I didn't. When I went up for Days of Our Lives, it was a 2-day role that was given to me. As long as I was getting paid, I didn't care what it was. Right. And then 8 months later, they brought me back for 3 years. And then 3 years turned into 8 years. And basically, I was playing Dr. Craig Wesley, a straight man who had a wife and 2 daughters. Mm-hmm. And when Michael Slade, a writer from Days of Our Lives, which I will tell you how that happens, that universal crossing point, we laughed at it because I was standing on stage with him in 2019 at the Daytime Emmys for After Forever. We were winning all these wonderful Emmys, 5 that year.
And it was, okay, folks, there's the little awards I will reference, like made fun of at the beginning. So there we go.
Well, five Emmys. We made history by winning 5 Emmys for the first time to ever win 5 Emmys in a dramatic series on any, what do you call them?
Awards.
Platform. Show.
Yeah, any platform. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was standing on stage and Michael was making the speech during Best Show, Best Dramatic Series. And I'm looking and I see the producer of Days of Our Lives, Ken Corday. I see one of the writers. I see a couple other people. And I'm thinking, I bet you they're going to have me come back and come out. And they did.
Yeah.
They did. And that was a year and a half. It was after COVID. And just this last year, a year ago, Dr. Craig Wesley came back to town and had a secret. And it wasn't another woman. It was another man. And that's something that was wonderfully supported by my peers. I was nominated for another Emmy. And I've got 4. You know, I'm grateful I've got 4 from After Forever. I can live without another one. I'll take it though. And I didn't go home with it. And I was not upset that I didn't go home with it for the reason of winning. But my character it was making history. It was the first time it was ever being done for an adult man coming out of the closet in an adult storyline. I had already come out, a gay man, doing this now with the gay character. It was a once in a lifetime thing. And it was the 50th year of the Television Academy celebrating the Emmys. And I thought, wouldn't it just be great if I could get up and say, we've got queer content and it's beautiful. Embrace it. And I did it on the red carpet.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, it's interesting because I've been on national TV one time by choice. I said, okay, let's do this. And I said yes when the offer finally came, but I was like saying no before it ever came. A friend of mine said, oh, Ricky Lake's new show is looking for cool content. You should apply. I'm like, I have no freaking desire to be on national TV. It isn't going to happen. And she kept bugging me. And she's actually the same reason that this podcast exists. She was the one who got me started in podcasting, like, hey, take over my podcast, all this. And that was for Life Uncloseted, my other podcast. Long story short, she starts bugging the shit out of me. I'm like, you should do this. I'm like, I'm not like you. I don't need the TV thing. She wants to be on TV. She's always wanted to be on TV. And she's done some morning shows and stuff in New York City and stuff. Well, the night before the audition closes, yeah, it was online audition, submit something, you know, 1-minute video. Why? I'm like, you know what? Okay, whatever. Maybe I should. Let's just see what happens. So hubby and I are sitting downstairs. I'm like, hey, I'm going to go do a little bit of work. I didn't tell him what I was doing. And I shot this video, came back out, and started to go to bed. And as we do sometimes, we check email right before we go to bed, right? I'm literally laying in bed and I get it. I had literally submitted this thing not even 30 minutes prior. I like, whatever. The deadline is at midnight, right? I get in bed and lo and behold, there's a email from the Ricky Lake producer saying, we would like to talk to you tomorrow and we'd like to go over your video submittal. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, what the shit do I do with this, right?
I don't got to
so
think
I
now.
I get online, you know, this is kind of pre-Zoom. I mean, this was clear back in 2013. So I don't even remember what application we used to do all this, but I'm online. They're in their little producer's, you know, room with like 8 or 10 people. They play the video submittal and this lead producer, the executive producer, is sitting at the end of the table. And he starts laughing. I can't remember the guy's name. He starts laughing. And I'm like, well, this obviously isn't going anywhere, right? And Kevin, what he said changed everything. He goes, well, I guess if we do this segment, it's going to be the story of my life. And everybody started laughing. And he goes, Rick, I don't think you know. Yes. About him. And he goes, what you don't know, Rick, is I did exactly what you did. I came out late in life here in Hollywood. I have kids and all this sort of stuff. He asked a couple of questions and he says, okay, we're going to do your segment. And I was like, holy crap, this is for real. Of course, then I'm like, what the fuck did I get myself into? Right. But it was one of those moments. I'm like, wow, what a world has changed, you know? And so I can really relate to your feelings, not near at the level that you did, but you're right. This representation piece is such a huge thing to where the Gen Zers and the millennials, I just want to slap them upside the head and say, see what we helped you get to, folks, you know?
Yeah. I'm grateful.
Me too.
I was spared over the AIDS epidemic. I don't know how thank you, God. I was a little kid and I knew right away that I was this person who had excitement when I would see men walking down the street, or I don't even know how old I was. I mean, it was just as long as I can remember. And I didn't understand women. I didn't understand what the women were supposed to be for me, you know, as I matured. But it was a secret that I had to keep because I would hear the people who, again, in my household, moms and dads are God. If you upset mom and dad, they may kill you or strike you down or smite your house or whatever the whole deal is. And I didn't want to be that. Once I knew what they were not liking outside in the world, I knew I couldn't be that. And I knew that that was something that was not good. I felt it was something that was not good. And then I started to pay all the attention to every gay character or boy in a story was Kevin. The trouble with Kevin, a good frost, Kevin, all that stuff. And I did everything to not be Kevin. And I've never liked the name Kevin. I never thought it was something empowering. I didn't find it strong sounding. And there was a time in my life where I was going, my stage name was Kevin Blair. I dropped Spiritus in New York early on. So it was Kevin Blair. And that was starting to sound very flowery to me and very light and flarish. And I just, and that was Kevin was with care. That S sound was in my head. And I thought, I have to find a new name. I'm going to reclaim my family name, my Spiritus name, my heritage, my family. And I'm going to change my first name. And I didn't know what it was going to be. It happened to be that some mail was addressed to me from the AIDS Quilt Foundation because my agent had just died. And I had told my agent years prior to his death, I said, I'm going to change my name because you change your name, you're going to find a new agent. And then right when he was in his last months, I was up at his pool with him overlooking the mountains and Hollywood. And I said, I think I'm going to change my name. And he just looked at me and said, whatever makes you dance, Kev. So I didn't know what the name was going to be, but I knew I had his blessing. And it came addressed to K-E-I-N Blair. And I just read it as Kean. Whoa, Kean. So for 2 years, I was Kean. And I allow no one to call me Kevin, nobody. And what I remember going to sleep one night. I don't know how to explain this, but I just, you know, you hear a song during the day and then it's repeating in your brain at night. Oh, where's that song coming from? You know, well, I heard this voice say, Kevin, Kevin. And my answer was, oh, well, Kian loves Kevin. It's okay. I don't know why those thoughts came to my mind. Next night, I hear Kevin, Kevin. This is, oh, Kevin doesn't love Kevin. And I had to find my way back to that. I had to embrace my truth, my name. I had to be about, I had to be in my late 40s. Early 40s. And I told this very dream, or this dream state, this voice I heard to my career coach. And I said, I think I'm going to change my name back. And she said, yeah. And that kind of freed me up in a sense. And things started to then unfold work-wise. You know, what do they say? The truth may piss you off, but it will set you free. And and I never, by the time that was going on, I never, at any particular job situation, work-wise, I wasn't going, oh, I got a girlfriend and I'm going to go out with her tonight. It was never that. It was more about if someone had a question, let them ask me. And if I feel that it's worth the investment, I will share with them the truth.
I love that. Whether it's worth the investment, that's a big self-awareness thing. When people ask certain questions of me, I'm like, are you, oh, it's almost like I want to be a real bitch in heels and go, are you worthy of the answer? You know,
well, then we're being bitches to ourselves. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think for me, this kid on Instagram, beautiful young boy, he's over in Dubai. And I posted one of my pictures, you know, and he starts, hi, how are you today? And I'm fine, thanks. You know, I don't want to let it go in and answer because then you're a bad guy.
Right.
And he started to say, you're so beautiful and handsome. Are you gay? Oh, no, he said, can I ask you something? And I said, sure. What, are you gay? And I said, okay, can I ask you something? Yes, he says. Why are you asking the question? And I knew why he was asking the question. He's some attraction, maybe he's finding, but he sees someone who he appreciates the work, and he's inspired by some stuff I've done. And he said it in the little, you know, texting back and forth. But he wanted to feel validated that it's okay if he's looking outside of himself over there. We had no gay heroes growing up, you and me. I mean, everything was hetero. There was no homo Batman and Robin. It was all by the straight norm. And I felt that when I realized after high school is when I really had my renaissance of discovery. We're about 10 to 20 years behind. And so my parents.
But here we are now. What is one of the things that you feel like for you as you're out owning yourself, owning your name, owning being who you are. What is one of the greatest lessons you've learned from just here I am, this is me?
I think it's a great accumulation of lessons. I think it's, I went to New York. I stood by to Hugh Jackman and The Boy from Oz, and it took me to New York for a year. I had never lived in New York for more than 3 months at that point. I'd gone to visit. And I was so excited. I was done with Days of Our Lives for those 8 years I talked about. And I then got to be the it guy. You know, I was standing by for one of the biggest stars on television and movies and Broadway. And shout out to Hugh Jackman, who is just the greatest guy in the world. He is such a dear man. And he doesn't need to do any of the stuff he does, except he's moving from authenticity at all times. And it's so beautiful to watch. And he taught me a great deal by just having freedom and no fear or deal with your fear. Anyway, so here I am in New York. And one of the first things that happened was I got a 2-person play in those, 2007 I went. I was there for 7.5 years, probably 2.5 years too long. But I got a 2-person play, gay thematic. Older man has HIV, younger boy doesn't. And there's this whole check mate game that's going on in a chessboard of how they're dancing around each other and trying to get their points across. And one of the soap fan magazines came to interview me. And he says to me, is there anything that you don't want to talk about? And I said, no. I said, if you say something I don't want to talk about, then I'll just say it. He says, so are you not only going to do gay roles, this is now gay man? Went, oh, boy. Okay, build up to that one. I said, what are you asking me? Are you asking me if I'm gay? Are you asking me if I'm only doing gay roles? Are you asking me if I'm out and gay? Well, here's what I can tell you. I have a slice of me that's probably someone's son, someone's uncle, someone's brother, someone's artist, someone's tenant, someone's producer, someone's everything. You know, I just listed all those slices of pizza. And I'm also a man in all that. I'm a man. I don't lead with gay. That's what I do maybe sometimes in my bedroom, or I won't mention other places at this particular.
Exactly. Exactly. But, gotcha. Totally get it.
But I really, I felt really solid in saying, I'm a man first, and you can have anything you want in your life and organize around that. Or if you want to lead with gay, that's your choice. It's not.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that kind of came to me out of that question. And then there was, then there was no parts coming down the pike for a while. And that's when I ran into Michael Slade. And I had been watching the last year of Oprah. And this is going to sound very Oprah, but I love her. And I love what she's doing to the face of television. And not only on her Sunday morning show, Super Soul Sunday, she would get these incredible people to talk about their experiences and what changed their life and what their turning point was, or what their Night of the Dark Soul was, or any of that. And I've always been a very spiritually connected and focused person. I try to be anyway. And the thing I could say about all of these people is that they were telling the truth, their truth. They were, something was personal to them. And they all had a story that they had to heal through to get to the other side. And that was just in the backdrop. And I thought, you know, I saw a friend do his web series and it was beautiful. And I rushed him after the award show. And I said, dude, I gotta work with you. You're so fucking talented. His name is, oh my God. I just looked at his name.
That happens to of us that are a certain age, anyway, Kevin. So let's just, cough through that. Like, okay, we forgot, but. it happens all the time. I was talking. Wait, I was literally talking to my insurance company yesterday.
It's Sebastian Lacoste. I was like,
it is. Yes, you got to hear this though. I'm talking to my insurance company yesterday, and like I'm like, I need to make sure this is covered. And she goes, okay, great. You know, what's your policy number? And like, she goes, and let's just verify your street address. I rattle my street address off, and she goes, and your zip code.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wait, this used to be so natural.
It's disappeared. It's all that thing. Someone's coming over here. Now, listen, introduce yourself before I can just say hello, because that'll be like, oh, I'm Kevin. I'm their friend. Right. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sebastian Lacoste had done this incredible series called Hustling. And I said, if you do another season, please, I'll even be the maid. You know, that was sort of like the desire. I saw what he did, and it was better than half the crap on television and movie theaters.
Right.
And I said, he said, I just took stuff that was real to me in my life, and it was beautiful. So I thought, what is in my life now? I am 50 years old. This is 10, 11 years ago. I'm single. I'm gay, and I am looking for love. I want a relationship. And right around that time, I ran into Michael Slade, and this is what happened. It's the God's honest truth. I'm at the gym up on the Upper West Side somewhere, and I hear, excuse me, are you Kevin Spiritus? And I like turned and said, yes. Now, when people say Kevin Spiritus, they don't, I'm so impressed, because Kevin Spiritus is not a Julia Roberts or
right.
Dustin Hoffman name. It's like, he's the guy in the soap that plays Dr. Craig Wesley, and he's got all the kids.
Right.
I said, yes. He goes, I used to write for you in Days of Our Lives. I went, what? He goes, I used Mr. Ryder on Days of Our Lives, and I saw you, and I just wanted to say hello. We never met. I went, Michael, nice to meet you. And what are you working on now? He said, oh, I'm just kind of in between. I said, you're not on any of the soaps the last four? And he said, no. I said, well, we should write something then. We should write something really like digital's coming out. It's the big new thing. He said, oh, no, thank you. And he put his hands up like, no, thank you. I don't need a novice writer.
Right.
And I looked at him and I said, no, I'm serious. I want to do something about gay men who are not 30. Mm. And he looked at me like I had just put my hand in his head and pulled his brain out. And he said, call me. Call me. We should do this. Like I that's to me, that's just, you know.
Yeah.
It's the huge. Right place, the right time. It's we just crossed at the right time. I would have been on the moon that day. He would have mm-hmm. crossed by. So we started talking. He said at one of our sit downs, he said, I'm having a little, I wanted to do a dating show, by the way. I wanted to do a dating show where every date was not the right date and it was mm-hmm. not the right person. And I was dealing with Grindr or dance clubs or too old or too young. And I just went, that's the idea. And each date he'll have a journal. And so I'm having a little trouble pinning you as someone who can't find a good date. And I said, he said, why are you in a relationship? He says, I said, no, why? He said, why? I said, have you eaten with me? I don't know. I just, it's not right now. And we sort of chuckled about it. And I said, what about you? And at this point, I didn't even know if he was really gay. I didn't have the sense of who he was. He wasn't leading with anything gay. And, but I said, how about you? And he says, I lost my partner of 15 years, 2 years ago. I'm very sorry. To a rare cancer, he said. And I said, I'm so sorry. Do you still talk to him? And he said, oh my God, yeah, I do. This is 2 years later. And I said, I don't know you that well, and I don't want to bring up bad juju with your relationship right. to his loss, but would something like my character having lost his partner over a certain amount of time and decline after a certain amount of time, wouldn't it be interesting if we covered reality and shot the present time of my character, and then the past would be the flashbacks of the relationship? And we get to see why they were so good or how they operated together and how they loved each other and how they argued. And that's going to be the core of the relationship. And then because we also discovered that when a person dies, when you have loss, they're not gone. They're there. They are there. And you talk to them or you get triggered by some picture you see. Oh, my God, Jeffrey would love that. Or Michael would, you know, have such a beautiful garden, like that garden, you know. And I also think that the relationship that you're having with the person when you or they leave, you better have some really good closure and some good, you know, energy about loving and forgiveness, because you will be chasing that to the grave if you don't. I've found from other people. And so that's how we put the show together. I would conjure up the character of Jason as this kind of invisible ghost, and I would talk to him during scenes, or he'd give me an eye, the side eye, if I looked the wrong way, made a joke or something. But that's a very non-original concept, but it, for some reason, it worked for us, and we talked about how the characters would interact. And so there came After Forever, and Michael said to me, you're okay being in this? I mean, if you want to write this with me, I'm great, we should do it. And I said, okay, there's no parts coming down the pike with my name on them, so let's do it. And that's when he said, everyone's gonna know now. I said, I'm the only one who doesn't, so let's be gay and let's put our truth out there.
But when we put our truth out there, it's such a powerful thing. It's one of the backbones of my whole brand and practice. In fact, there's a quote that I say at the end of every speech that I do: the truth of who you are is far more powerful than the false truth you're pretending to be. So go show the world who you are.
Yeah.
And it's scary. I mean, come on, Kevin, I know you've done some scary stuff, from auditioning and, you know, having to be the backup for Hugh. I mean, that had to be like fun and scary at the same time. But the truth is, you were living your truth in those moments. And the thing is no matter how we live our truth, there's always going to be an element of being scared, shitless, afraid of all of this. But the beauty of when we cross into that space of being truthfully who we are, there's so much power in that. And I think just taking the step into that role and realizing we can do this, like, you know, back and forth of the, you know, characters and the tragedy of what happened and losing somebody to cancer and all this stuff. It's pretty amazing what happens when we allow truth to prevail.
Yeah. I was just thinking about when you said that. It's a beautiful quote, by the way.
Thank you. It's mine. So don't steal it, bitch. I will come after you in a heartbeat. No, I'm kidding.
I will put you in the Zoom room. I feel that Maya Angelou's quote always sticks in my mind is, you know, we are more alike than we are unalike. And my spiritual practice, which is of many, many spiritual paths, raised Jewish. I love Shakti Gawain's creative visualization. And then there's also the law of attraction. And then there's the Course in Miracles, which is something that I had been given by one of my ex-boyfriends early on. And I remember going to see Marianne at a lecture one day, and I finally went to hear her speak. And I'm, okay, this is another wackadoo, you know, spiritual path. But I was appeasing him, and she talked about something with love and the way we're treating ourselves in a relationship to our work, to our parents, to our family. And it's not a special love. We are all special, the Course will say, and we're no more special than the other person. And she was speaking to me. She did that lecture just for me, I'm sure. And it changed my perspective. And I thought, we are all children of Source, God, love. And where my body stops does not mean there's a space between you and me, or this wall, or this table. There's an invisible force that's running through everything. And we all know the same thing because we're from that same place, if we choose to really go to that place. And I just felt that was one of the, that was the important takeaway from Michael and I writing together. He and I had a story, and we would finish each other's sentences. And
Kevin, that the power of not only that experience, but you just said something that I don't want to let slip.
Yeah.
Because the power of going places that we don't think we can go is such really beautiful energy that sometimes we don't realize that just giving ourselves permission to go to that space is one of the most powerful things we can do as a human being.
Absolutely.
Because when we go there, and as an actor, I know you understand that, like, okay, I'm going to go to this space in this character that I'm not that person, but I've got to bring myself into that space. And sometimes, many times, that's when those amazing things happen. Like, oh my gosh, then suddenly, you know, Emmy, you know, nominee and Academy Award nominee, because they ingratiate themselves into this. And people often go, well, I don't understand how they do it. You know what? Actually, you do, but you just don't realize you do, because every one of us does it every day. Every one of us is doing something that we're pushing ourselves into a space and doing it to fit in or to go after something we want. It can be a role. It can be a job. It can walk away from a relationship. It can be admitting I'm gay, whatever it is. We push ourselves into these spaces, and sometimes we take it for granted. One of the greatest
sometimes take it for granted.
It's totally taken for granted. In fact, one of the things I say to guys that come to work with me who are in midlife coming out of the closet, and they always ask this question. It comes up in everyone I've ever worked with. Well, how do I talk to my spouse about this? How do I have that difficult conversation? And I always get really quiet. Of course, I'm like in my head going, I really want to bitch slap you right now, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do it in a very gentle way. I say, what's the most difficult conversation you've ever had with them? And something will come up: buying a house, having children, choosing whose job's going to take precedence. I said, how did you have that conversation? I realize this is different. I'm not saying it's not. I realize in some ways this is a big thing, but it's not much bigger than some of those other things. So let's start with how you did those conversations, and then let's build from there. There isn't anything any of us have done that we haven't already done. It's just always new territory, like a new role. Every time you go out for a new role, you've done some of this before. But there's going to be the nuances of what you bring into that character and into that role.
So you've interviewed my dear friend Gregory Allen for his new books, and we're writing a script together.
Right.
And it's based on time travel. And I told Greg that he wrote a great short story. I said, let's turn this into a feature. And we're working our butts off trying to make it absolutely right before we start to pitch it. And time travel is a very interesting thing if you don't have a DeLorean or an actual time machine, right, or you don't have a potion. I don't know. That if you don't have something that is 1 + 1 = 2,
right,
it's hard to do it.
Yep.
So I said, I'm gonna suggest we do this very carefully. We make everything we talk about the time travel, and it's got to be about everything time space is already happening at the same time. So what you're now talking about on a daily basis, we've already told our parents that we're gay. We've already won the award for the project that we're working on, blah, 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 blah. We think it's in the future, but it's actually already within us. And if you can grok that concept, then you're really fun. And I just, that's where I get excited about, like you're doing this whole podcast about, you know, gay men 40 plus and what's happening in their lives. I want to do the same thing, but down the street about the spiritual part of all of our life. And I'm telling you, you've inspired me. Other people have inspired me. And now what am I going to do with that? It might go into a story. It might go into a script, but it's all within us. And again, I'm grateful to Michael for, and you just said it too. You said, you did it. You still did it. You made a choice and you did it. And I will never forget. We've lost Michael, by the way, for those of you who are listening. During 2020, Michael, about 3 years prior, he was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer. And for 3 years, he fought a diligent fight. And just before one of our little short projects that we did to stay current during COVID, it's Riley's Unforgettable School Project, and we lost him. But the end of the first season, we were standing in the theater during the casting crew screening, and he's looking forward and I'm looking forward, and the end credits are rolling. And I looked at him and I said, did we do that? And he said, yes. We did. That was a very proud moment, because we took something and from nothing and presented something. And I can't tell you, I don't know when and how and if something like that will ever happen again. But it's magic. It's standing your ground, and it's knowing your truth. And when the first year, I raised all the money because Michael said, I don't know how to raise money. I said, it's okay. I don't know if it's I before E, except after C. And he laughed. So I raised all the money. And one of our donors at that time said, you know, we're going to give you money. Don't worry. But, you know, just shoot the pilot and sell it. Okay, well, we're going to be in the kitchen. So we're most likely going to shoot all the kitchen scenes, and then we're going to shoot all the living room scenes. And it's going to take just as long to do the pilot. But I went back to Michael and I said, do we want to do that? He said, really? Do you want to do it? I said, no, I don't want certain name actors to take over my parts, like Rob Lowe, John Stamos, and any of those guys at that time. As I was a kid, they were right in front of me. But and I don't want to let anyone else be the showrunner, because Michael and I knew, we both said we didn't want to let that go, because we knew the vision, and we knew the heart of this piece. And then I remember having to become this person for Michael at the end of his life. Folks, if you can avoid the life imitates art scenario in your lives, stay positive and walk away, because it shocked us all so much. And not only are we filming, you know, at these times, and I'm watching him get sick, second season, three of our producer and our editor had lost both their moms. And we just kept going. And Nina Foch, the great actress, great acting teacher, would say, leave it at the stage door.
Right.
To heal. Thank you, Nina. Wherever you are. I think the answer to your question is, and something you touched on, is when I'm dealing in my truth, I've taken that with me. And, you know, that's the shiny particle object that I would say is about And I swear this is the weirdest thing. I watched Hugh Jackman on stage every night, and I would sit there and go, now he just stopped the show and he pointed at something that happened that wasn't supposed to happen. And he told the truth. He presented, that wasn't supposed to happen, folks. Hold on 1 second. Are we gonna get this fixed? And he'd take care of everything he had. But if the audience was with him, we were loving it, you know? Mm-hmm. And he had freedom. Life is so baby. It is so great when you are free. And I just, woo. So that was a big pressure taken off.
But I think that's the thing, that freedom to just be in that moment. It's interesting that you just told that story about Hugh, because you and I had already talked about, you know, prior to coming on, that my husband and I had seen the previews of
Boy from
Oz while we were in New York. I actually believe that was the same trip that, no, it probably wasn't. But we were on a trip to New York and we saw Idina Menzel and If Then.
The Wicked. Oh,
If Then. Not Wicked, If Then. Okay. So Lover, you know, all this stuff. And in one of those moments happened during that show. And then we got to see the show in LA a few weeks later because they were getting ready to go on tour. But in the show, she's sitting at the kitchen table eating cereal with the, you know, the boyfriend, so to speak. And in the midst of that scene, she actually starts choking. Like, oh, choking, okay? And in that moment, it is the best thing of the, I mean, it wasn't the best thing of the whole show, but it was so beautiful. The conductor of the orchestra, all you see is this hand raising up with a bottle of water, and Idina sees it out of the corner of her eye, and she walks over, takes a swig of water, hands it back, goes and sits back down, right? So, of course, we're like, wow, that was so seamless. So, of course, we get to see the show 2 months later, 3 months later in L.A., and we're watching. And of course, it doesn't happen.
They didn't put it in.
I'm like, okay, that was, but it was one, that's a really beautiful example, like you brought up with Hugh Jackman, of being in that moment and just being in the truth. This is what's happened. This is what we're going through right now. This is, let's not sugarcoat it. This is the thing, right? And I think too often as humans, but I'm going to bring it back to our gay male audience, we don't embrace the truth of what is. And then we try to sugarcoat it. We try to hide it under a rug. We try to hide behind something.
A majority. Let's call it a majority.
Yeah. I think, and then if we would just let it be the truth, we can move through this stuff so much quicker. And I don't think you have to move through. Okay, get through it. Let's get through it. No, embrace. This is where we are. This is what's happening. You know?
I'm not challenging you from a bitchy place. I think that's with everybody. I think that's the answer. I feel because I tend to think that if you're leading from a place of truth, love, any the golden rule, whatever, you're going to treat people and help people the way you want yourself to be treated.
Absolutely.
Most like that. I mean, we strive for that, but that doesn't, I don't think that just leans itself. I think because maybe the gay culture has had more challenges or different challenges that we had to deal with publicly than not. I'm fascinated now with this age of pronouns and trans and politically correct and how we're making our way through stating our truth.
Yes.
And I have a dear friend, shout out to Alexandra Billings, who is teaching me so much by standing in her truth and her power. I didn't know her from Adam. That was a pun. But I literally, she's a gift to this world. And I think back to the times that I was young and I was not clear on my feelings of being gay or what that meant. And that's just a sexual thing. I think I'm figuring this out. It's a sexual thing, or it's an attraction to the same. It has nothing to do with my sexual identity, right? My pronoun of he. But now think about the people who are in the bodies that they don't necessarily believe feel comfortable. I'm so amazed and impressed. And there's a wave, there's a tidal wave of people who are like you said, that, you know, producer said your story is going to be my story, and right. you're talking about, I find it absolutely breathtaking, and I support it, and I say, if it makes you dance, baby, do it.
Absolutely.
And I am finding so many people who are new to me in my life, and oh my gosh, I just we've got so many layers and so many things happening, and it's all happening at the same time, and it's not happening.
Well, it is. Yeah, it is. And I'm assuming you're talking about Alexander Billings, who was on Transparent. Is that the same person?
That is the yeah. one and only.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. And I feel this so much, and it's interesting, Kevin, that one of the things that I found, because my whole speaking career started in Southern California, and it actually started at Cal State Long Beach with speaking on panels. Right. Yeah. And I was speaking on PFLAG panels to psych, sociology, all this sort of stuff. And it was so interesting because this was 2010, 11, somewhere along those ranges, I was starting to do this. And I was like the interesting anomaly. Oh, you were married to a woman and you had kids and oh, wow, whatever, right? But very quickly, my story became old news as the trans and non-binary and gender non-conforming became the thing. And I saw it through a similar lens, like, this is so interesting. Look at how quickly we are starting to reveal. And here's, you know, getting ready to wrap it up here. Here's my perspective on all of this. I think the reason this triggers so many people, whether we're gay, we're bi, we're lesbian, we're non-conforming, we're transgender, is because whoever's really most triggered by it, they're triggered because they're not being who they're meant to be. And we are the yes. direct reflection in the mirror Absolutely. Of why can't I be who I am? But they would never admit it. And I never got that till I got it. And then I suddenly like, oh my gosh, this is wow. And in that moment, when I started really understanding that about myself and my reactions to people who didn't understand me, it was so much energetically different. I'm like, okay, they don't get it. Let's move on. Because guess what? They'll get it when they are meant to, or they won't. And that's okay.
And it's so loud that they
can't. Oh, it's so loud.
That they yes. can't hear.
Yes.
And they listen, we all do it. We all have something. I don't like that. Why don't I like that?
Right.
Why are you asking me this? Why are you right. asking me? Right. I just here's a quick little picture. I was gonna say one more little thing about
Yep.
Showing a little picture of Alexandra at her POTUS. She's doing POTUS in Westwood.
Nice.
Mitchell Anderson, I just have to do a shout out for Mitchell. So Mitchell Anderson and I grew up in the ranks together as actors. We never worked with each other. He's my leading man in After Forever. And he had retired and gone to Atlanta and became a restaurateur. He opened a kitchen and he's got two stores. He's amazing. It's called, that's right. I just knew I was going to forget it. Metro Fresh in Atlanta. And Mitchell didn't want to be 40 years old and sitting in a casting office waiting for them to say, oh, you're good, let's hire you. And in 1996, he's one of the three or four people who really helped hold the space open for me. Was at the GLAAD Awards, he came out as gay, and he had been doing Doogie House. I know he'd been doing the family show. I can't remember. You'll do the
Doogie Howser, the MD,
and the other one. He's always been asked that question on the red carpet. You know, what does it feel like to be a straight man doing a gay role? And he had to stop his monitor. You know, the cue card. He said, "I got to stop and go up prompter for a minute. You all need to know, I'm not this straight man playing a gay man. I'm a gay man playing a gay man. That's the short of it." And the eruption from Century City. And this gala was so extraordinary. I'll never forget it. And now I come back and say, you gave me my life. Let's come back and do, you know, it's just, it's 10, you know, tenfold. I love it.
And I hope today, one of the things that this conversation has done, and it's been a pure joy to have this conversation with you, man. And I don't mean that lightly. I mean,
But then I'm seeing the emotional welling up of eyes from both of us. And it's just really something.
But I hope that this has helped some other men see this beautiful space you can go to when you give yourself the freedom to be in your truth and to own it and just give yourself and others permission. I hope that this conversation has given some other men permission to like own who you are and where you are as a gay man. You're not done. You started out by saying, I mean, you said that, you know, I'm not done. And I don't feel like I'm done. You know, we're both guys in our 60s and I don't feel like I'm anywhere close to done. I hope not. But if I am, if something happens, you know, hey, I lived a pretty fucking good life. You know, yeah. I got to have the impact I wanted to have, you know.
You're living it. It's not even,
I am. Yeah.
It's not I got to live. You're living it. I remember people saying to me, I was so scared about being gay and I was guilty about being gay and I felt, you know, remorse after having sex, all that negative religious bullshit.
Yeah.
And I remember people saying, you'll grow out of it. And I just went back to that. I've never had that thought until you just sort of said, you know, in the past, all this stuff is now, it takes time, but it does take time and be patient and have perseverance. And it's process versus product. It's being a principle. And it's also not fear. You can't have any fear.
Right. Exactly. Well, my friend, thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom and insights and all the good stuff. I wish nothing. I mean, whatever comes next, make sure you reach back out and like, hey, Rick, let's talk again about here's what's going on. Or, you know, you're going to go do something with this concept. I know you're going to do something. I just know you. You're going to take this next thing about spirituality and stuff and you can go turn it into something. And I would love to. You and I should probably have some conversations outside of the podcast about that. Like,
I do want to say one more thing. So After Forever season 3 has been completed. The scripts were written by Mike and Michael. And the Emmys and the strikes and the pandemic, everything got pushed. So we've now had to find a way to come back and enter into the world of streaming. And it's sometime around the end of spring, early summer. Look for After Forever season 3 on Prime.
Nice. Oh, can't wait. Can't wait, man. Thank you so much. And gang, if you haven't seen it, I've watched some of the episodes and working through it.
Wait, watch some?
I've only had time to, I mean, come on, guy. I'm talking to hundreds of people. Like, they send me their books. I can't read all your books before they, I mean, there's a life, you know? Plus, I have a husband to take care of and kids that I'm still raising, even though they're 20-some years old. My God, you know?
Watch it with you after forever.
But we'll have all the links to everything for everybody to connect and find everything where you want to see it. And again, Kevin, thank you so much. And thank you again for popping in with my group the other night. And you really,
You're very welcome. I want to do it more.
I love it. Love it, man. So thank you so much. And thank you everyone for being listeners. And we'll catch you in just another week on Life Uncloseted, on 40 plus Gay Man Gay Talk. See, this is what happens when you're 60 years old. You got too many podcasts going on and all this sort of stuff. But thanks guys for being
here. Poor guy has too many podcasts.
Shut up. Okay. I'm done with you now. You're done. You're out of the audition room. We've seen what you can deliver. So anyway, all right. Thank you so much, buddy. Appreciate you.
That's a wrap for 40 plus Gay Men, Gay Talk, where size doesn't matter. We drop our bullshit, get over our screwed up fears, make bold moves, and live life without apologies. Don't forget to join us on Facebook at 40 plus Gay Men, Gay Talk, where the conversations continue.